LNE Volume 3, a video by the great Franklin Carbonati, spanning Rome, Milan, London, New York, Paris, Barcelona, Montreal, and Toronto, featuring Rebo, Volvo, Snens, MTNW, Anger, Talker, Xavier, BO South, Lure, Rehab, Time, Zonic, XSM, Kemto, Salon, TD, Emno, Fayer, Toser, Nove, Stays, Villo, OSF, Waste, Soul, Zano, Guko, and What. The full video is now available on our Patreon. Enjoy, peace, love, and respect.
Boom, what episode is this?
Episode 8, I believe.
It's like 8 or 9.
Yeah, something like that.
We got some backlogged episode. We have Claw Money in the house.
What?
I'm super excited right now.
Thanks for coming out.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm in the motherland. I am from Flushing.
Yeah.
That's the shit.
Yeah, you're from Fresh Meadows, Queens.
From Fresh Meadows, yeah. But I was born in Flushing. I lived here till I guess I was like a little under one.
Was there a scene in Fresh
Meadows? When I was one, it was huge. It was, yo, that shit was popping. No, there's a lot of graffiti writers from Fresh Meadows. Uh-huh. KAC, their crew, they're like, yes. And, oh my God, I have like Alzheimer's. All my boys, you know, hey. Greed and Greed's brother. But I was already moved to Long Island when I was 11 or 12.
When did you first have an idea and start noticing the graffiti existed as a thing outside of just random Metallica tags and stuff like that?
Well, I think I became really infatuated with graffiti as a kid, driving in the back of my dad's like Buick with my sister. And there was this writer named Mirage. At the time, I didn't know his name. He drew these three-toed feet. It almost looked like a Hang Ten logo.
Okay.
You know, foot, R.A.P.?
Yeah.
It was like foot, but it had three toes. It was on every overpass. Go from the Bronx to, like, deep Long Island. It was everywhere. Mm. And I didn't even know it was graffiti. But my sister and I, we would play all those like car games and we'd be like, there's one and there's one and there's a green one and there's a white one and there's a blue one. They would always be in like fun colors and stuff. We were obsessed with it.
Just that one particular.
But I was really young. I'm going to say, you know, 7, 8. Like I really started like fixating on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I gave it like another thought other than like in the car. And then my uncle bought me, what's the famous book that everybody gets? Subway Art.
Subway Art.
I'm telling you, I really do have all of them. You know, kids, that book. and then I started noticing it as graffiti, where it was just this thing, and I didn't know what it was. I just was like, oh, it's feet. Look, more feet, 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 feet. And then I sort of like realized the relationship of it. And then by the time I was in like high school, junior high school, everybody was just sort of scribbling their name everywhere, like in school, on the desk, in the, you know, bathroom, in the stairway case. And my nickname was Claw, so I was writing Claw. Yeah. But it wasn't stylized graffiti. It wasn't like it wasn't really real graffiti. It was like child graffiti, like sort of everyday normal kid stuff.
Yeah. That's really funny that you say that, because so I was born in Manhattan. I lived in Queens for a while until I moved away. Then I came back, but I would always come here every month when I didn't live here. And I didn't write or anything like that, but I would be looking at the graph, and the only one I ever noticed was Traps T. And I didn't know it was a T, and I didn't know what graph was, but I would just remember seeing that T. I thought it was like a star. I remember seeing the star everywhere, and I'd be driving with my parents would be driving. I'd be looking at the back out of the window and stuff, seeing I would just be anywhere I could see it. I would just, you know what I mean, kind of like the same thing. So, but I didn't pay attention to the names.
I think it was, and you know, if I really look back on my like over 30-year career, that this was all sort of like subconscious decision making. Mm. But the fact that it was this like iconic image. Mm. That didn't, you didn't need to read it it was sort of like understandable, and my graffiti developed and turned into sort of like an icon because I guess I realized at some point that it was just much easier for other people to pick out. They didn't have to say like, what does that say? Like, I see letters, I don't understand it. The claw, the foot, MedStar, Traps T, like they're so easily like digestible to the brain that
It's like a stamp.
Right. Yeah. It makes it so much sort of stand out in a way where letters sort of fall back. It's interesting.
A lot of people know you from that film Infamy that I personally have seen a lot of times. And
it's a good movie.
You come off in there as like the black sheep of your family. What do you have to say about that? Like, how was it growing up doing that and everyone was against it?
Well, it's funny. As much as everybody was against it, everybody weirdly respected it in a in a strange way.
Even outside your family, or
inside my family. Yeah. Like, the more I think about it, like, if maybe I felt like I was like black sheep, but I was like really actually like hyper supported. My cousins loved it, and they were like, oh, my cousin's claw, and they were like going to school in Manhattan. They were, you know what I mean? And I think even my other cousins who were sort of more like nerdy than me, they kind of were like, oh, she's so crazy. Like, I think maybe 15 years ago when that movie came out, I was on my way up, but it's sort of backfired, where like my family, like, they're so proud of me.
Really?
Finally.
Yeah, because I remember in Infamy, you were saying how you didn't ever really wanted to talk to your mom about it.
Well, my mother is a separate issue. My mother has completely no idea who I am, what I do, what the claw is. I had this like insane job painting all the windows at Lord & Taylor on Fifth Avenue. I had like a full two blocks on Fifth Avenue for 3 months, like covered in claws. And I thought, like, finally, my mother. I have the windows, the Lord & Taylor, Mom. Come on. Like, she's like, why? Like, why would they have that? Oh, that must look terrible. Like, oh, you painted your claw. Like, so she just asked me recently. I had to, like, do some job or something. So she's like, how did the mural go? I was like, it was fine, Mom. She's like, why did you paint? I'm like, oh, Mom, come on. I painted claws. She's like, what? Clouds? I'm like, you know, claws. And she's like, oh, you painted claws. Like, ugh. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, like,
We had no.
She's like, you could do better.
We had Noel Vjork on the show actually recently, and he was talking about how in his whole life, amongst everybody he knows, he feels most in common with his graffiti writers. Like, what would you say about that? Do you feel like you have most in common with those kind of people?
Know if I have most in common with graffiti writers. I find myself having like most in common with like other women that are like really like striving to do major things like in the world. I think having graffiti as you know, a point of reference gives a commonality to so many other people. Once you meet a graffiti writer anywhere in the world, of course you have so much in common, but I don't know if it's if that's how I feel in the same way. But I definitely think that, you know, there's an intrinsic understanding when you meet another graffiti writer, like globally.
Like an unspoken bond in a way.
Totally, right? And you can like be boys with somebody and they not even speak the same language and they get it.
You were saying that, like, going back to the Infamy thing about how it almost seemed as if, I read in an interview you were saying how graffiti for New York City youth was to you like a rite of passage, and then a lot of people were into it. It's just like the crazy ones or whatever that would stick with it. And you were talking about how you said there was something in my life I was always missing. I didn't feel like I was here. And the graffiti drowned out your insecurities and makes you feel like you can do anything. It's like you're in your own little private world, very connected to the world around you. Do you feel like growing up in whatever family situation you were in and discovering graffiti on your own, that helped you deal with the problems of day-to-day life?
Yeah. I mean, I really think that, damn, my parents must have did a bad job. Like, what the fuck? Because they weren't, like, kind of navigating me to things that were making me feel really good about myself. They were sort of navigating me to things that made me feel bad, whether it was, like, ballet or piano. Like, I didn't excel in that. I was good at art, but I think they were just like, oh, yeah, yeah, just here, sit down and draw, but they weren't, like, bringing me to, like, art class. Like, what if they had, like, nurtured that more or really sort of been in touch with, like, what I needed? I think they really were like, you are going to be this. And my father grew up, like, super poor in East New York, Brooklyn, and fucking went to college on a scholarship, went to medical school on a scholarship, but, like, so poor, like, where they couldn't even afford to take, like, the bus, and it was, like, a nickel or something. And he was like, you're going to be a doctor. God damn it. Like, I'm a dentist. I couldn't get into, like, medical school. I got into dental school, but, like, you're going to be a goddamn doctor. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to be a goddamn doctor.
And you knew it from the start.
I fucking was like, I'm not going to be a goddamn doctor. Like, I'm just not. And my younger sister's a doctor. Okay. He got what he wanted. Right. But I just was like, I'm not doing that. You know? I think that they had all these expectations because I grew up in, you know, a different set of circumstances than they did. And they had, like, these, like, major expectations for me. And it put too much pressure on me. Then I went the opposite. And I was like, I'm going to fucking do what I want. Then I get involved in graffiti. And it turns out it has all these, like, rules and annoying things and patriarchal fucking lineage bullshit that you got to follow anyway. And I was just like, yo, fuck this. Like, I'm just going to, like, do this because everybody's telling me I can't and I kind of can. So I'm just going to do it. And of course, we didn't have the internet then. And I could sort of just, like, sneak around and be Claw, and nobody knew. Nobody was, like, you know.
Way harder to find out who's who.
Yeah, completely. And I remember for, like, a really long time that I would just, like, hear all these stories about, like, the Claw and, like,
who she could be.
Him, big black guy with one arm. he's this, like, huge dude who, like, uses a cane, this, that, like. And I was just like, cool. Like, this is cool. Yeah, like, I'm not going to tell anybody.
The more mysterious, the better.
I was like, all right. And I think, like, I was able to sort of stay in the shadows for, like, a very long time. And that was a real, like, and, you know, writers today, like, they don't even know about that. But that was a huge advantage, I think.
And now that you see it, I've dealt with a lot of the same things of, you're born into this family and you are going to be a doctor. Before you're born, you're already going to be this thing in the eyes of your parents. And it's not that they come from a place of negativity and trying to ruin your life and not let you be who you want to be. More so, it's just, you know, like, traditions.
It's immigrants. They're immigrants. And they want better for their children. Yes. And they want to just totally change the entire family's trajectory in one generation.
Yeah.
I fucking get it. I have a kid now, too. And I, like, pin hopes and dreams on him. Mm-hmm. And I try really hard not to pin them too deep.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Right. Now that you have a child of your own, how do you... Because it's just normal to have expectations that you really want fulfilled. How do you deal with that?
Well, I feel like I talk to my kid in a really real way. And right now I'm really, like, breaking down, like, the internet fuckery to him with these, like, gamers and, like, lame YouTubers that want you to subscribe and buy their merch. And I'm trying to, like, explain all this stuff to him. And he's just, like, so mad. And so, like, no, they really shouted me out. I'm like, they shouted you out because they have a bot that sees who's watching it. And it's going to say your name because they want you to spend money so you think that they like you. And he's like, no. Like, so... I'm like, listen, if you want to be a YouTuber and a famous gamer, you better fucking be smart because those are the only ones that make it. So get your shit together. You know what I mean? Like, you can't spend your life, like, watching this. Like, so I don't know. I think it's really hard. Like, you want what's best for them, but they have their own ideas about stuff. And you know, everybody's like, what would you do if your kid is going to be a graffiti writer? And I'm like, what do you fucking think I'm going to do? I'm going to fucking look out. But he's not going to want to because his mother and father are graffiti writers. Yeah, and he's like, ew, ugh. You know what I mean? Yeah. Watch funny. Him be a doctor. Watch this motherfucker be a doctor. A gaming doctor. He only fixes people who have, like, you know, problems with their with their joints from playing too much, right? Yeah. Exactly.
From day one, you knew that the doctor route wasn't for you, and I know you went to FIT, right?
Uh-huh, I did.
Was that, you just knew you were going to do art, period?
I knew I was going to do art. I started going to FIT, and then I started going to nightclubs, and then I stopped going to FIT, and my father was like, oh my God, you're failing school. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not paying for college, like, just for you to fucking fail, just for you to have housing, and, like, get a job. And I got a job as, like, a Gal Friday receptionist for my father's, like, friend's son's sweater company. And then from there, I just started moving around and moved my way up to, like, an assistant designer within, like, a really short period, like a year or so. And then I was like writing graffiti and I'm like trying to show up in the morning on time to do like pencil sketches of like commodity coats that are whatever. Everything kind of looked the same. All the brands sort of looked the same. This like crazy 90s color block, like ski jackets, but they were like fashion. So they weren't really like warm.
Yeah.
And I remember drinking like so much coffee, and this was like before you had computer illustration, you had to draw everything with a pencil, every little stitch to like delineate where all like the different cuts of the fabric were, and my hand would like shake from drinking so much coffee, and I was like, this is just not for me. And then I started working illegally in nightclubs because it fit my schedule better. And that is basically, you know, like I you could basically make no money in the 80s and 90s in Manhattan and kind of still have a good time and have a cheap apartment. I think I paid $235 a month rent. Yeah. I had two other roommates and like, like something crazy. And, you know, you only had to make a couple of bucks and you go have a $10 bill in your pocket and go out and have a few drinks and be fine. Like, it was a different time. You didn't have this pressure to fucking win, to, you know, hustle. And, like, it wasn't, you know, you could sort of walk around and write graffiti leisurely. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. And not have to constantly figure out how you're going to fucking pay your rent, like pay your bills. You don't have to fucking pay. You have internet bills. You don't have cell phone bills. It's just different. You know what I mean?
Sounds like a dream.
It was. It was. Now that I think about it, it's just so much less complicated.
Yeah. So it was FIT and design assistant by day, claw money by night.
Right. And so then after that kind of dried up when, you know, I got fired from like two different jobs. And I'm like, I can't fucking work a day job, like, you know. And then I was like coat check girl. And then finally I became a bartender and started working in the nightclub scene. And that's when sort of like all my fashion stuff started up again. Because now I'm like working in a nightclub. I don't have a lot of money. So I'm going to go to the thrift store and buy a dress and cut it up and make it into something else. And then people started coming to the bar and like, where did you get that? And I'm like, well, I made it. I repurposed it. And they're like, well, when you're done with it, why don't you sell it at my store? And then I started, you know, oh, I'm short on cash. Let me sell this. I'll make another one. So I sort of started to like dip my toe back into fashion.
Yeah. Speaking of brand, I find it really interesting how back in the days, like there weren't really graphics on the tees in women's clothing. You were talking about that in an interview and you just kind of said, fuck that. And you started making your own graphics. And that's when your brand, like, popped, right? How'd that happen?
Yeah. Well, I guess fast forward, we're talking, like, the late 80s, early 90s here. like FIT, and then like I'm steady bartending in the early 90s, I guess. And then I moved to Cali to get out of New York because I had like tons of beef, whatever, la 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 la, a million things happened. I moved back to New York. And while I was in California, I became an assistant stylist. I moved back to New York. I was like, I can be a stylist. I'm going to do this for a living and I'm not going to assist. And I started like working my way up to that. And then I met a young Miss 17. And she started working for me as an assistant. And we started hanging out. We became besties. And she kept trying to get me to paint. Mm-hmm. And this is like the, like, 99, 2000 something. And I'm like, it's for you kids. I don't do that anymore. Like, and then one night she got me out there. I don't know. I was drunk. She got me. And we did a couple of spots. And the next day, I just remember my phone going off like the mm-hmm. hook. Mm-hmm. Yo, you're painting again? And I'm like, what? I guess it was all over the internet. Claw's back. Oh, my God. I saw a claw on Avenue C. And there's pictures. And I'm so happy. Oh, my God. I haven't seen a claw. So I guess I had, like, sort of given up graph from when I left New York in 94. For, you know, I painted a bunch in L.A. 95, 96. And sort of stopped in 97. And then I'm in New York. So good 6 years, right? And then the claw started popping up, and then stuff started really changing fashion-wise. There was a store called like Prohibit that was run by this guy Dagan and this Japanese woman Miwa that was importing like Japanese denim and kind of Bape, and then like A-Life opened, and hey, why don't you do a claw for my t-shirt brand? Hey, why don't you do a claw for my Japanese denim brand? And I woke up one morning and I was like, I have this great idea. I should put a claw on a t-shirt. And it was sort of like after 9/11, the city was so depressed. Mm. Everybody was just like, what the fuck are we going to do? Like, we're going to just let this be a shithole? No, let's rebuild the city. And like these cool stores started opening up. It was very like, we're New Yorkers, we're all gonna stick together. And boom, I put a claw on a t-shirt and here we are.
And you started at first 3 years out of your basement, right?
Yeah, out of my basement. And it was like a side job to my styling gig as just like a, you know, like as a joke. I made a t-shirt and put it in A-Life and I put it in Prohibit and the next day it's gone. Can you make more? Can you make them for men? Can you make them on black? Can you make them on gray? Da, da, da. I must have made like 20,000 of that one, that first run. Like it just was everywhere. And also all my styling gigs had dried up. Nobody wanted to make like videos or commercials or catalogs in New York. All the production moved to California after 9/11. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of like out of the ashes of like the burnt city, like the city that we loved falling apart, like claw money was sort of like born from that.
Wow, that's crazy.
But it was sort of a byproduct of me just, you know, dabbling again in graffiti with Miss, and then it was sort of like it became advertising for the brand.
Why did you stop doing graph for a while?
I was busy. I was over it. I had beef. It just was like, I just thought it was dumb.
Did you go harder before then or after when you started up again with Miss 17?
No, I never went as hard as I did when I first started. I feel like I didn't even go that hard with 17. It was just well thought out and well executed and very impactful because it was with another woman. Mm. She was painting every night. I was painting like once or twice a week. Mm-hmm. Just, but I was like, I have the spot for us. Like, we got to do this.
Yeah, you
spot.
Have them in mind.
So, you know, I had a little notebook in my car. And I don't think I did it like really seriously then. And then like the clothes grew out of that. And then I just felt like, oh, I really like am doing this as marketing for my brand. And everything was so underground. Like, if the cops came to the store, nobody's going to say where they got. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was like real, real chill. And then it blew into like a real business, luckily.
You used to wear a prom gown when you were painting?
I wore everything.
And then?
I don't know. I came from a party. I had a party dress on, this, that. I would like walk all the way up to like 100th Street, like a Broadway, and like a dress. And like people would be like, did I just see that woman paint? I'm like, no, of course you didn't see. You saw nothing. Bye. And that was like a great cover, but also it brought all like the horny fucking dickwads out, you know? So it was a great cover for graffiti, but not such like a great cover for like attention or whatever.
Cause you were going in all the whatever neighborhoods.
I was going crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, then I started like painting with more people, but I did like the early part of my graffiti, I was alone a lot.
And when you opened up your shop finally, how long was that after you first initially started making the teas and stuff?
I started making the teas in 2002 after 9/11, mm-hmm. and I opened the shop in 2014.
Okay.
It's a long time. Not overnight. I'm not an overnight success.
Yeah.
Would you say like your brand appealed to a lot of the youth because not a lot of brands, like their owners, do graffiti or commit, like, you know what I mean, are really part of that culture. So I feel like the youth, if someone's really in it, that makes these t-shirts, it just has more value to it.
Well, I think the claw represents so much more than graffiti, and that's why it has more of a universal appeal. Mm. It's broader than that. And also, it has a mutable meaning where the viewer can decide what it is and
make their own interpretation. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's up to interpretation. And, people who love cats.
Yeah, yeah. It could be anything.
Claw, right. Yeah. Love claw. Right. And when I got arrested and they were like, what is that claw? And I'm like, I'm animal rights. And they didn't call Vanta Squad. It was a good one. Like, yeah. I was like, it's PETA, man. Anti-fur, okay? I think that's why the claw has so many meanings. Mm. And like as we said, that you can put your own interpretation on it, and that's why I think it has a mass appeal.
Yeah. Do you have any good Vandal Squad stories?
Yeah, any good Vandal
Squad
stories?
No, none. I have none. Oh, the only Vandal Squad story, because I never had the pleasure of being arrested by the Vandal Squad. But the Vandal Squad came to my office when I had a studio on 23rd Street when they were going hard after Utah. And let me see, what year is it? Definitely like statute of limitations is up. So Utah was, she knew she was leaving, but she was going to like bounce. Or maybe she didn't know she was going to bounce at this time or whatever. But I knew I was going to stop painting because I had just gotten a book deal. And I was like, okay, I'm going to like, I did this movie and it's kind of like low key and undercover, but I'm like going to do this book and I got to like stop painting. But this chick is going to, like, go out of state, and I, like, love her, and, like, you know what I mean? Like, we got to, like, do this thing. And she was like, let's hit these trains. And I had hit trains, like, a couple of times. I never really was into doing trains. Nobody saw it. Like, it was just, like, annoying.
Yeah.
I hate when graffiti, like, is reduced to, like, a photo. Like, it's sad. Yeah. You know what I mean? So she was getting pressed. And Chicago and Boston and now New York Vandal Squads were all working together to like get her.
Wow.
Fucking A, man, right?
Crazy.
For the trains,
right? Because that, okay, so listen to all my graffiti writers. You don't want the Vandal Squad a knocking? Don't do transit. Stick to the streets. I stick to the streets. It's my trick. When I do transit, they come to my office. Okay. So they came to my office. There were 10 of them.
Wow.
And and I had just been to my boy's funeral. So I was wearing a suit. Like it was just a very odd day, right? Like, so I'm like wearing this like really like suit and like really nice shoes, my hair dye, makeup on. And the cops walk in and they see there's like five girls in there and they're like fussing around with like t-shirts and measuring stuff and folding stuff and da da da. And they were just like, I guess they thought they were gonna like walk into like a graffiti factory.
Yeah,
and they're like, what is going on? Why are these girls like with t-shirts in here? Like, what's happening? And why is this like claw person in a suit? Like, you know what I mean? And I was like, can I help you? Like, what do you want? You know, they're like, oh, they're like, we just want to talk to you. And they're like, come outside. And I was like, you can talk in front of my employees. They're like, no, come outside. So they made me come out to the hall. And they pulled this picture out of me on the train, standing on the train. Like,
in front of your film.
But let me tell, I'll tell you that. This part at the end. Oh, so, and then they pull out a picture of my dog, my 17-year-old three-legged dog. Shout out to Peepers! And I had made a blue tape, like, mohawk and, like, eyebrows and, like, whiskers. So she has, like, all this, like, weird, like, blue tape stuff all over her face. And I'm like, fuck, they found all these emails between me and Utah, and they're printing out these photos. And they're like, who's this in this picture? And I was like, I don't know. And they're like, isn't that your claw? I was like, I don't know. And they're like, is this your dog? I was like, I don't know. Like, I was just like, I kept being like, I don't know. And they're like, do you have a lawyer? I'm like, I have 10 lawyers. I have 10 fucking lawyers. Which lawyer you want to talk to? You want to talk to my IP lawyer? You want to talk to my criminal lawyer? Give me your card. I'll have one of them call you. Are you arresting me? They're like, we're not arrested. We don't need to arrest anybody right now. So, my family, right? We'll go back to my family, the black sheep of the family. My uncle was RIP when he was living, was a super high-profile criminal defense attorney. And the first time I ever got arrested, I called him. And I was young, under 20. And he was like, I'm not going to tell your parents. Just stop this, but if it happens again, just call me. So every time I would get arrested, and whoever I would get arrested with, whether it was 3 o'clock in the morning, I would call my uncle, and there would be some young lawyer from his law firm that would come down to the Tombs, like in a bad suit, and they'd be like, Claudia Silver? Because that's, my name is Claudia Gold, but that was like my arresting name. So they have like a whole list. They're like, Claudia Silver, Claudia Silverman, Claudia Goldberg, Claudia Gold. I'm like, hi. Because I used to try to like sneak out, like if I was sleeping and they said Claudia Silver, I would wake up or something. And they're like, whatever. It was so stupid. So my uncle, I was like, these guys came to my office and they're hassling me and da da da. And he's like, do you know this woman? And I was like, yes, it's my friend. I'm not saying anything. Fuck this. And he's like, okay. And so he's like, she is not dealing with you. If you hassle her anymore, like, you are going to be embarrassed beyond belief. If you want to talk to her, you call my office first. And they just stopped. But that was it. That's all I had to do with the Vandal Squad. And I'm telling you, they were like, oh, let's go down and get claw money. And then they came in and they're like, why are these like all these like nice little girls here like working? Like, it just, it was so funny because I think they were just like, where am I? You know?
So you never got into any serious trouble for graph?
Never got in serious trouble for graph. And I think it was definitely like my uncle, like it was just like, oh, we can't like really like fuck with this guy. Mm-hmm. He's got connections, and I'm really lucky and blessed because I know other people also who are in infamy that got in trouble.
Yeah.
And I did not.
Because of that.
Yeah.
Because of that film and stuff.
Because of that film. Because we were actually painting illegal graffiti with the director, and he was like loving it. It was cute. It was cute. I was like, come on, jump over the fence. We were like jumping in human shit. Like, it was disgusting. Whatever.
How did you feel to be one of the few writers to represent New York City in that film?
Well, of course I didn't want to do it at first. I was like, I can't do it. And then really like all of my like old school homegirls were like, it's so important. These girls don't know that you're a woman and you have to tell your story. And if not now, when? Yeah. Like, you know, I had already started my, like, clothing brand, and, like, it was sort of like, okay, the party's over. Like, I got to wrap this up. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you can't sort of live in the shadows and then try to, you know, step into the sunlight at the same time. So I was, I felt like I had said everything I had to say. I had done everything I had to do. I had supported the women I wanted to, like, support and really, like, throw my my weight into that and show, you know, the world about, like, equality and all that shit. And there really wasn't any reason for me to paint anymore. Yeah. It was, like, on to the next phase or whatever.
I could only imagine how many girls you motivated all over the world to, like, start writing graph, being, like, rebellious.
Shout out to my babies. Yeah, but, you know, really not just girls, to everyone, you know?
For sure.
It's like you can make something from nothing.
Yeah, that film was definitely, like, a landmark in graffiti, honestly.
Yeah, I think it was, like, one of the better films that came out that was, like, a 100%. Serious.
Yeah.
But it's a little depressing. Right, it's like a little bit of like a sad movie, and then there's me, right? And I'm like, "Whoa, everything's great! Oh, I have a friend! Wow!" Like, it's just so me. What can I say?
I guess you gotta.
I'm like a little unicorn.
Yeah. So you said that when you started stepping into the, I guess, the world of business, and you said actually that you can't live as a vandal forever. There comes a point where. Well, I mean, you can. There's just going to be serious consequences.
You can. I'll tell you something. These lifers, these guys that there's no finish line, I get it. I respect it. I just don't think they have a good life. I don't think that... And you know what? This may be... I'm a sellout, this, that, whatever. I think graffiti is a really, like, pure art form. But I also think it's a stepping stone into other things. Into, like, learning about yourself, into learning to trust yourself, into learning to trust your friends, forging friendships, allies, all that stuff, navigating, like, who you are within a community, all of that. But I think, like, when you become a lifer, like, that becomes your whole life. And to me, graffiti is just a part of my life. Mm-hmm. It's not the only thing I care about. And I still feel like, even though I'm not, like, writing illegally, like, I'm still, like, in the mix and, like, squashing beef and making calls and, like, and handling stuff, like, true to, you know, my craft, my community, but I'm just not painting legally. I am so I kind of, but I'm lucky, not everybody gets to do that, right? So I get to, like, kind of use the claw that was illegal. That's sort of like hats off to like all my peeps out there doing their thing and, like, you know what I mean? So I think, to me, even though, like, I'm a street artist now. Yeah. I am. It's horrible. I mean, I am, right? Fuck, I do legal murals, but it's, like, still got, it's not graffiti by any means, but it still is hats off to graffiti. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's still, like, reminiscent of graffiti, and I'm still repping graffiti, because if you go over my shit, I'm going to fucking kill you.
I was actually going to ask that. What if people go over your mural with a fill?
They don't.
But if they were to, I'm
saying. I would go fix it.
You fix it.
Yeah. And then their phone start ringing. Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. You have beef with Claw, your phone starts ringing. Okay? That's what happens.
And a lot of these things, you said that when you stepped into the commercial world or the business world, a lot of the things that you learned through graph were applicable in that world in terms of consistency and just grinding it out day by day until you...
I think that, like, I do think that graffiti mimics corporate America's, like, rise. It's like you start off, you know, as a lowly toy in the mailroom, right? Yeah. And you kind of work your way up in, you know, in your sort of, like, position in the respect spectrum or whatever. Mm. And it's completely... tribalistic and the way we do business. Mm-hmm. So I guess everything I really learned in graffiti that I could apply to business really gave me, like, a huge advantage. including like bluffing and sort of like knowing, you know, how to sort of stake your claim and know when to sort of like pull back and all that. And of course, you know, dealing with men.
Yeah. So you've worked with a lot of crazy companies.
I have.
Do you ever thought that was going to happen?
No, I never thought I was ever going to make a fucking penny from my claw. I never painted to make money from it. I never had any idea that that was going to cross over into my livelihood or my my whole identity as, you know, even as like a regular person, you know. Like when I started painting graffiti, was sort of the end of the train era, and everyone fucking hated it. The train riders fucking hated it. They would be like, you are a fucking toy if you didn't get up before 1985 on the INDs and the IRTs and BMTs. And you ain't shit if unless you fucking did this and da-da-da. Look at this shit. It looks like crap. With this throw-up shit. Like, because what Cap and the throw up guys were doing wasn't like considered great or like the real like art of the train movement, but through the throw ups is what evolved into street bombing. Not that they were writing on the street before they were writing on trains, but it wasn't the same thing. Where it was like, you know, going out on like nightly missions and trying to like figure stuff out. So I had literally no clue that this would ever sort of cross over into my work.
What was the first brand that reached out to you where you were like, holy shit, you really just reached out to me?
It was like all at once.
Really?
I don't know. It was just like kind of all at once. Like Nike came. The book people were chasing me down. And, you know, after Nike was, you know, NASCAR. And I was doing stuff for Colette, which RIP, which was like the greatest retail store in the world. And I don't know. I've done so many, like, whatever, they're lucky to have me.
But feel free to holler, you know. Girl needs a gig.
So talk about the book, Bombshell, right? You're talking about Bombshell? Yeah, yeah, yeah. What was that about?
What was that about? Have you not read Bombshell? It's just my book. It was like an art book, and it's sort of like a visual autobiography of like everything claw money, from fashion to my family and my friends and their graffiti and my graffiti and all sorts of stuff that was really sort of like in the beginning of like my ascending of, you know, I feel like that book really sort of made it easy to understand who I was. That like book really like changed the perception of like what they saw the claw. They didn't know why they saw it. They didn't know what it was. And then the book came out and they could sort of contextualize it. And that it was a woman. So, like, the movie came out, but, like, the movie has a very, like, niche audience where the book sort of is more broad or
that,
whatever.
That book
and
to
more,
you was, like, it was like your retirement, no?
It was sort of, I guess, yeah, I knew. So when I painted with Utah and I did that train, that was, like, one of the last times I painted illegally because we were just about to finish the book and give it to the publisher to like get ready to print it. It was like at the end of 2005, and the book was supposed to come out in 2006, but then there were printing issues and it came out at the beginning of 2007. So I have like, yeah, but the book was basically the tombstone. I called it the tombstone, and then my book publisher told me it was a milestone and not a tombstone. Mm-hmm. So they keep asking me to put out a second book, but I'm not there yet. I don't want it to be the same. I want it to
be something totally different.
Yeah.
And I understand that.
Yeah. Mm.
You think it would have to do a lot with graffiti or just like current events and like
I
stuff that's going on?
I think I wouldn't do any photos at all, and I would
any
write
photos.
A book.
Nice.
Because I have some crazy, like, you know, it would take you like 90 hours on this podcast to get through all my stories. But I have some like crazy stories. I was thinking it would be really cool to do a book and kind of end it in 1997 when I came back to New York City and not even talk about anything else. Like the whole like commodification of the claw and the all like the branding of it and just sort of end it like as this like, you know, young woman coming back to New York and kind of restarting her life.
How have you seen New York change from paying $200 in Manhattan to what it is now?
New York sucks, but like I kind of feel with what's going on now is a really good thing in a weird way. Yeah, even though it's very like sad and depressing when you walk around. Soho's like a shanty town. Yeah. Like it's super weird, but it reminds me of how Soho was like in the 80s and 90s when it was like a weird shanty town with like homeless people everywhere, and you would just paint, you know, like you'd be able to like paint graffiti at like 8 in the morning because nobody would be walking around. Of course there's like cameras and everything. I think it's gonna get a lot of the people that were in Manhattan that shouldn't have been there but could be because they had the money out, and then the people that should be there maybe more affordable housing and bring back some flavor. It became a flavorless place.
Yeah. In terms of even graffiti, I seen an article yesterday how the graffiti-free units, they're
right,
like
they're
suspended.
Right,
yeah, that's
it.
So it's...
I don't know. Is that a lure? Are they? Is that the cops trying to lure everybody?
That's interesting. I didn't even think of that.
And,
yeah.
Oh, I always think that. I always feel like...
I heard
like,
there's no Vandal Squad right now.
Yeah, yeah, Vandal
really,
Squad.
Meanwhile,
either.
Like, I'm looking at these accounts. I'm like, this is totally the Vandal Squad. Like, who is this? Like, I'm so paranoid. But I guess whatever. That's how I had to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I almost feel like it's some kind of like
little setup,
switch,
right?
Yeah, so maybe. That because there's cameras everywhere and they can just catch you. So they're like, "Hey, it's a free for all. Why don't you join in?" And now,
yeah.
Kind of what they're doing with the protests.
The
and
protests.
The
I heard about that. That months after they're gonna look after the they're gonna
know,
go after these people.
Really?
Yeah.
And then I read that they're giving $7,000 information towards anyone known looting, and they're gonna.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like everything is not as it appears.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they're going so hard announcing that there's no graffiti, like, is that who they're coming
from? Why would they announce that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it seems like why would...
If anything, just keep it low
keep
if they don't
low,
want people vandalizing.
Right? Doesn't that seem very weird?
Yeah.
Got to question everything. You got to question everything.
What are your views on what's going on right now in terms of this whole virus and all that stuff? Do you truly believe that it's what they say?
No! So I don't fucking know. I don't know. I feel like this is the beginning of the new world order.
Yeah.
They're making us go into our homes, lose our jobs, become confined and get used to it, right?
Yes.
And I'm like stuck in a house now with like my husband and my kid that I have to, you know, be with 24 hours a day. I can't work, you know?
And this
who's going to watch my kid? Like, it's just... I have a husband. We have, like, whatever. He can, you know, I can work part-time. And I am. But I can't work at full capacity. They're trying to bring in some new shit.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't necessarily think it's what it is, but it's something.
No, things are definitely changing.
People are dying.
Yeah.
I know so many people who died in the last 3 months.
Mm.
And some of them not from corona, but from quarantine. Like, from... the effects of the quarantine, like turning into like either suicides or ODs, like it's really fucking rough. It's really terrible. I think they're really dismantling our entire society.
Yeah.
But
the thing,
for what?
Mm-hmm.
And then
for what? 99% survival rate of something that's worse, like less worse than the flu.
But at the same time, like your grandmother, your uncle, like, you know what I mean? Like, they're so susceptible. I lost three of like my husband's like childhood like neighbors or something that, you know, they seemed healthy, like they died of COVID. So it's real. Do you know what I mean? And the hospitals were completely overwhelmed. There were trucks outside with dead bodies. So how could it be fake? But it's also, like, it might not affect us, But then they're saying it's coming to affect 20 somethings and giving them brain damage. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, is this real? Is it not real? I think you have, like, there's something going on. Do I think it was engineered in a lab? I actually do.
Yeah.
And, you know, was this sent by another country to destroy our economy? Yeah.
What makes you think it was engineered in a lab?
Because it's killing a certain type of person that has, you know what I mean? I don't know. It might not be. It's just what I think. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, I'm not a doctor. I'm like, just my fucking crackpot theories, but I don't know. I don't know why I think it was created in the lab. It just seems a little too convenient. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But even speaking of the doctors, like, all they have to say, I've seen articles, and all they have to say is, according to medical studies, and then they can say whatever they want, and people believe it. So as long as they say that, people are just like, oh, that's true.
But then, again, my sister's a doctor. Yeah. She's fucking working in the goddamn hospital, and she's working, you know, 20-hour days and going home to sleep for 4 hours and working every single day because it's all hands on deck, and it's just insane. She's a pediatrician. She's seeing these kids with it, and she, like, they don't know what it is. They don't know how to fix it. They can get you better if you they have all the, but they also can't. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's very scary also not knowing what it is, right? So I hate wearing a mask. I have fucking pimples everywhere. I never have fucking pimples like this, you know, for 20 years. Like, I'm doing it because it's the right thing to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I read something. It was on the news. It was like, if we were to just wear a mask for, I think it was like 3 weeks or something like that, then we'd completely shut out the virus. Whereas then I saw this other thing on Instagram. It was like a chart, like a bar chart of all the different countries and the numbers of them flowing. And America started like here. And then over time, it just, all the other countries, like, we're all the way over here. And you know what it is? Because it's just like an American thing to really be questioning authority blatantly. And
but our media is so fucked up. They're so angry and they're so untruthful, and they are pushing agendas. Whose agendas? I don't know, but
it's definitely a fear agenda.
Right.
A lot
and
of people
so
are
there's
scared.
This like crazy fear agenda. And so once you can't trust the media and they're giving you information, this one says this, like, who do you believe?
Yeah, you turn to your own opinions, your own views.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. In other countries, at least my family's from Ecuador, no one over there questions the media. They see something on the news and that's the bottom line. But it's an American thing to, even if the media has clearly lied to them in the past and the government has stolen hundreds of dollars from the citizens, here it's like immediate question, which leads to some people wearing a mask, some people not, different beliefs, and then it leads to whatever it leads to. But I think that that's a big part of it is our what I was thinking about, like, hardcore punk music, it originated in America. Graffiti, it originated in America. Skateboarding, it originated in America.
This whole country is based on rebellion.
Hip-hop, yeah.
Totally. I mean, we rebelled from England, and, like, we're not listening to this, and we're doing that, and we're taking this. And, yeah, I agree with you. It is, but it also is very American to be, like, very bored of COVID. I'm very bored of it, and it's nice out, and I want to go, like, hang with my friends and... Yep. Fucking go to the park and get on Tinder or whatever the fuck it is that people do to just be like, I'm over it. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And not sort of follow through with things that could ultimately, like, benefit everyone.
Because at the end of the day, none of us really know what's going on.
Nobody
knows. Our ideas, but we don't truly know if we're right. There's no way to prove it. It's only like, you know what I mean? We're hearing so much conflicting evidence every single day. When it first started, it was no one wear a mask if you're not a physician. And the next day, it's everybody wear a mask. And the next day, it's masks don't work. And then we're like, all right, well, these were all from valid media sources.
But then you have a president who, right, is saying this guy is the guy to listen to, wear a mask, and then he doesn't wear a mask. Like, it's just, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So... yes, America's sort of screwed up in their whole belief system. America's a very weird country. We, like, love crime and gangsterism, but you know, only in movies. But
yeah,
you know what I mean?
They like romanticize it.
Right,
yeah.
And like violence and warfare and all and racism and all this stuff, but not, you know, just in movies or whatever. It's crazy. It's totally fucked up. It is a fucked up country. And I didn't even grow up like that. I grew up like being super patriotic. I was hyped. I was American. Then I realized after traveling through America that like, ugh, New York is the only place to be. And like, we should be our own country because the rest of America is like ridiculous. And yeah, America's embarrassing. I don't know. Like, it's weird. Like the whole racism thing, like, right? Being from New York, you're like, people are racist that? Like, how can they be? Like, in New York, it's almost racism. What? Yeah. You know? But
a lot of these events brought out that racism in a lot of people that you never even knew were racist. Like, especially this whole thing, this division with the cops and going on right now. You see, for example, in Bay Ridge, all these people coming out, and then the people that are, you know, about Black Lives Matter, they're going there, and you see the complete opposites of people conflicting to the point of physical, like, you know, fights going on. So, like, what is going on right now? Like, these people were usually quiet. Now all this is going on. You know, I'm talking about the people that support, like, the cops, you know, being so racist.
They're, like, get them out of here, you know? And they're in all these different pockets in New York City, but they stay in their little pockets. Yeah, just stay in your little pockets.
They got their little community.
But I heard the cops aren't even going out there. Like, there's no cops anywhere. They just, can you imagine having a job, right, where you're like, I just don't get enough credit. I'm just not getting credit I need. So I can't go out there and do my job because people aren't licking my ass.
Yeah.
Get these fucking cops out of here. You guys are doing a fucking bad job and go fucking do it. Go do better.
What do you think that we should do for restructuring the police system?
What am I, a fucking city planner? I don't know. Like, they need to fire all these cops and hire new cops. They need to, like, have sensitivity training. They need to 100%. Fucking understand, like, race relations. They need to, like, give a shit about the community they're serving instead of just, like, pushing numbers and, you know, getting collars and, like, but it can't happen because the whole city gets money from people being arrested and going and processed and going through the system.
So they don't have that window of
people
firing
are getting
cops.
Paid. Yeah. They are getting fucking money for it. Yeah. They are getting overtime to fucking arrest them and process the fucking stupid ass paperwork. It's corrupt. And I think it's always been corrupt. It's just now people see it and are realizing it. I don't know how to do it, but it's something that's got to be done.
Yeah, with the whole COVID thing, you didn't fiend to, oh, wow, there's no cops outside. Maybe I should go paint. There's not that many people outside. Maybe I should go painting. I can wear a mask and not be looked at weird. Maybe I should go painting.
I can't paint because I have a kid, and I just can't deal with the idea of being, like, dragged out of my house in front of my kid. Like, I just can't, like, deal with that thought, like, right now.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't wanna go painting. I never wanna go painting. I don't even wanna paint when they like pay me to paint. I'm like, ugh. I'm like, great, I have a job. It's not like fun. It's work now. Like it's not like even when I was like bombing, it was like a job and like it just like stops being fun. Like, do I want to turn the clock back and be 18 years old with the wind blowing through my hair and crush some fill-ins and, like, go back and have my friends, like, drive me so I can take pictures and feel all high and smoke a victory blunt? Yes. Is that going to happen? No. Do I have to fucking paint a claw to feel alive? No. I've figured out other ways to, like, have satisfaction in my life. I think I didn't when I was... You know, early on when I was painting, that was like my joy vehicle. And now it is not. It would only bring me problems. I don't want to be a lifer. But I love graffiti and I'm a fan of graffiti. I will help perpetuate real graffiti. In any way I can, and support the people that are doing it, support the culture, elevate the culture. But me, myself, going out and painting, I'm done.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that that's, if anything, admirable, because it's just, at the end of the day, that's just adaptation to the times changing and your life changing. And
you got to be able to fucking move.
Yeah, priorities.
You got to be able to turn on a dime. You got to be malleable, flexible. That's how you win in life. How am I going to get through fucking COVID? I am going to take all different kinds of jobs, doing things that I've never done before. I just fucking art directed a website for Porsche products. Would I have ever taken that job before? Probably not. I am malleable. I think that is the key to surviving.
100%.
And for graffiti's benefit, is it for me to be in the streets? Or is it for me to be sort of talking its praises now that I'm like turning into like an elder statesman, supporting young people that are putting in the work? Know your fucking role. Yeah. And like, graffiti is a young person's game. When I'll be honest, when I see older people, I'm a little bored. I'm a little bit bored. I'm like, damn, you know, this still gets your, but you know what? God bless them. If that's what they want to do and that's what they're into, some people, that's their shit. And you know what? I'm not going to judge. For me, it's not the right choice.
Do you still pay attention to it? Like when you see it, what goes through
Hell
your mind?
Hell yeah. Yeah, and I'm like literally like squashing beef constantly between so many different people, and like have to be like pulled into some bullshit on some crap. But me, myself, am I getting my hands dirty? No, but that's my style.
It's really interesting you say the role, because like graffiti does need people like you that have an outside perspective and can guide the younger generation, like you said, because
I don't think it's a happy life or a good life to be painting graffiti.
Yeah. For example, to be a lifer, like you said.
Right, to be a lifer. I don't think it is the be-all, end-all.
Yeah.
And just having all that pressure on you all the time to even just maintain your spots. Or when you're old, man, it's like, it just seems so, you know, like there's just other things that seem to take more precedence. But I've changed. I became a fucking mom and a business owner, and like responsible for 4 employees getting paid, and like, you know what I mean, like it's a lot of pressure, and if I go down, I take a lot of people down with me.
So it's not worth it.
I can't go down. I'm fucking retired, man. I'm retired. One day my kid is college. He'll be like, damn, mom, did you go bombing? That's really lame. Did you hit up 95, mom?
Yeah, so it's been an hour and a minute. I definitely have heard some. I really enjoyed this conversation. If you got anyone you want to shout out, anything like that, anything you want to say to the youth that is listening right now,
paint graffiti and figure out your life. Don't be a lifer. Lifer's not, it's not the life you want. But you know what? Fuck it. What do I know? I know nothing about COVID. I know nothing about masks. So therefore I know nothing about anything, and you know, whatever, choose your lane. And I, of course, I'm shouting out all of my peoples, you know who you are, and, all the lovely ladies out there doing their thing.
Claw Money.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.